You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Have you ever wondered how inbred the Habsburgs really were? What women in the past used for birth control? Or what Queen Victoria's 9 children got up to? On the History Tea Time podcast, I profile remarkable queens and LGBTQ plus royals, explore royal family trees, and delve into women's medical history and other fascinating topics. Join me every Tuesday for History Tea Time, wherever fine podcasts are enjoyed.
All right, quiet on the set.
Camera speed.
Sound production, take one.
Action!
Welcome to From Beneath the Hollywood Sign. If you love old movies, Hollywood history, or the golden age of filmmaking, you've come to the right place. This is the podcast that talks about amazing stories of Tinseltown from another era. Hear fascinating conversations with writer-producer Steve Kubine, who quite literally lives just beneath the Hollywood Sign, and actress-writer Nan McNamara. Now your hosts, Steve and Nan.
Welcome back to another episode. Hi, Nan.
Hi, Steve.
We are starting a new feature on From Beneath the Hollywood Sign.
Kicking off the month of March.
We're shaking things up, and we're going to do, and we'll do this every month, a star of the month.
Oh, I love it.
Where we're basically going to talk about the life and career of a worthy performer.
Yeah, do a deep dive.
Yeah, a little deep dive and suggest movies that you may not know that they were in. And so this inaugural star of the month is one of my favorites.
Yes.
It's going to be Paul Douglas.
Well, one of the reasons I love Paul Douglas is I love any actor who's a late bloomer.
He is a late bloomer. It's funny, you may not know his name, but I guarantee you, you will know his face.
For sure.
He had one of those great character faces. He looked really gruff. He was this big, beefy guy. And you've seen him in a million movies and probably didn't realize it. But we're going to tell you all about those movies.
And he played heroes, villains, comedic
yes.
roles. He really ran the gamut.
Yeah, he had a great range. You know, he was this hulking, boorish, gravel-voiced, sometimes bombastic actor that really, really left an impression on Hollywood.
His film debut is pretty spectacular.
Yes. What a way to start a film. And he made his debut, as you mentioned, at the age of 42.
Yeah.
So good on you, Paul.
Yeah. He played the cheating but reformed husband of Linda Darnell in the Mankiewicz-directed film A Letter to Three Wives, 1949, which is one of my faves.
Oh, such a fantastic movie, and what a great screen debut. You know, it also starred Jean Crane and Ann Southern and Kurt Douglas.
It was a huge hit, the film,
huge
and
hit.
It made him a pretty instant star.
Yeah. So over the course of his relatively short career, if you think about it, he ended up playing bosses and coaches and businessmen, blue-collar types. But still, on occasion, he was cast as the very unlikely romantic leading man.
Right.
Which gave him a chance to really show the tender heart that was beating beneath that gruff exterior.
Yeah.
Which is what he does in A Letter to Three Wives.
Yes, yes. I love this quote that you have. He was quoted as saying, "The public's so relieved to see somebody besides a junior Adonis in the boy meets girl setup. They give me a cheer. Guys look at me and say, if that mug can win a gal, it's a cinch for me," which is such a self-deprecating thing
I know,
say.
Which makes you love him even more.
Yeah.
Well, he was born Paul Douglas Fleischer on April 11th, 1907 in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. He was born into an upper-class family. His father was actually a well-known doctor.
Okay.
He performed plays in high school and later attended Yale University briefly. He dropped out. It wasn't for him. And so he embarked on a very short-lived football career before he got into acting. Yes. Then he drifted into radio and became very successful sportscaster and master of ceremony back in his hometown of Philadelphia.
Which was a pretty big market. Still is a big market.
Absolutely.
So in 1934, he makes the jump from Philadelphia to New York City to work for a little station called CBS.
not too shabby.
Yeah. And he hosts a popular music program called the Saturday Night Swing Club from 1934 to 1939. That really makes him very well known.
Yes, absolutely. But while he was in New York, he gets bitten by the acting bug again. So he starts appearing in stock and in off-Broadway plays, testing the waters a bit. And finally, in November of 1936, he makes his Broadway debut, playing what else but a radio announcer.
A radio announcer.
Yeah, it was in a comedy called Double Dummy.
Okay.
Which I don't know much about.
No, never heard of it.
Great title.
Yeah. And the play only runs a month.
It closed early, but, you know, he was bitten. I think that was it. He had to act.
So he becomes one of the country's most popular and successful radio stars. He serves as announcer and straight man to Jack Benny and Fred Allen. I mean, you can't get much bigger than those folks
exactly.
on the radio. George Burns and Gracie Allen. And he even got to call the World Series in 1937.
I know. Isn't that great? I would love to find a recording of that to hear him call the World Series. Very cool. Things changed for him probably in 1946. He was making a fortune in radio, but he really walked away from it all to appear in a play on Broadway. It wasn't just any play.
Yeah.
It was
He picked a good one.
if you're going to leave your radio career, this is the one.
Yeah.
It was by renowned writer Garson Kanin, and it was his comedy Born Yesterday, which we all know about the boorish rich man who basically underestimates his showgirl girlfriend, who he takes along with him on a trip to Washington, D.C. to bribe a congressman for political favors.
Right. So he plays that.
He plays the boorish guy.
Exactly.
And of course, the showgirl was played by Judy Holliday, the great, who got the break of a lifetime when another film star, Jean Arthur, dropped out, and she was the understudy who got to step up and, like, 42nd Street went on became a star.
And became a star.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the play also starred Gary Merrill as the journalist, which was then played by William Holden in the film.
Yes.
So the play is an overnight sensation. It ran for 3.5 years.
Imagine that.
Yeah, 1,642 performances.
Wow.
So it's one of the longest running plays in Broadway history.
Yeah. For his performance, he won a Theater World Award, and he was awarded the Clarence Derwin Award as the most promising male.
Wow.
He was 39 at the time.
Most promising male at 39. I love that.
I love that.
So as we've talked about other stars in the past, this Broadway success catches the eye of Hollywood, of course, because they're always looking for
new people. Troll Broadway for their new stars.
Yes. So he's lured West to appear in films, and this is hence the debut in Mankiewicz's A Letter to Three Wives, proving that he's not only a lead on Broadway, but he can be a Hollywood leading man as well.
Yes. And funny, when Columbia Pictures ended up buying the screen rights to his smash Broadway success in Born Yesterday, of course they wanted Douglas to repeat his Broadway success.
And wouldn't you think he would?
You think he would jump all over it.
Yeah.
He turned it down because he didn't like the script. He felt that the narrative's focus had shifted to favor the Judy Holliday character and her journalist teacher, who, as you mentioned, was now played by William Holden in the movie.
Right. So he is replaced by Broderick Crawford.
Who's a total lookalike.
I mean,
they look so much alike. Sometimes I would forget or get confused which movie was Broderick, which movie was Paul Douglas.
Yes. There's a fascinating story about Judy Holliday getting cast. Harry Cohn, head of Columbia Pictures, did not want to hire her, even though she had originated the role on Broadway.
Yes, it was a smashing success.
Yes. At various times, it was reported that Rita Hayworth, Gloria Graham, Lana Turner, and even Jean Arthur, who had dropped out of the Broadway version, that he wanted them to play the role. And this next little twist in the story is just classic.
Which I love this twist, and there's a little bit to it. When Judy Holliday made her Broadway debut in Born Yesterday, Katharine Hepburn was in the audience. Katharine Hepburn was absolutely captivated with Judy Holliday. Yeah. She thought she was one of the most talented women she'd seen, great comedian. So she became a big champion for Judy Holliday. And this is where it ties in with Judy getting the part in the movie. Harry Cohn's not sold, so Katharine Hepburn gets
Garson Kanin
and his wife, Ruth Gordon, right, to cast her in this very showy part in her latest movie, Adam's Rib from 1949, which also starred Spencer Tracy.
Right. And so it highlights not only her comedic ability, but it's also a dramatic role.
Yes.
I mean, Adam's Rib is considered a comedy. So finally, Harry Cohn is convinced to give her the part in Born Yesterday. And what does she do? She goes on to win the Best Actress Oscar for her performance.
So I guess we can thank Katharine Hepburn for robbing Gloria Swanson of her rightful Oscar for Sunset Boulevard.
Right.
Again, I'm harping on it.
But Paul Douglas does get to play the role in the television version of Born Yesterday in 1957. And he stars with Mary Martin.
Yeah, which would have been interesting.
Yeah.
He didn't dwell too much on losing the part. He got busy on his own career. And his career took off like gangbusters. His popularity soared, and he's in a series of very successful films, including the baseball film It Happens Every Spring in 1949, which co-starred Gene Peters and Ray Milland. And then he reteamed with A Letter to Three Wives co-star Linda Darnell in the musical comedy Everybody Does It, also 1949. I wonder if he sings in that. I haven't seen that movie.
Yeah, I haven't either. Well, you know he's hit the big time when in 1950, the next year, he's asked to host the Academy Awards.
Yes.
Now, nowadays, people are very trepidatious about
nobody wants
that.
To host.
Yeah, nobody wants to do that. But his star is really rising fast.
After hosting the Academy Awards, I mean, his star took off. He appears in The Big Lift in 1950, which is this great war drama that co-starred Montgomery Clift. He's also in, and if you haven't seen this movie, please go see it, Panic in the Streets, also 1950. It's this crazy film noir that was way ahead of its time because it deals with a deadly virus which is unleashed on New Orleans.
Oh.
A really timely movie to see.
Yes.
It's, you know, co-starred Richard Widmark and Barbara Bel Geddes. And then he appears in 14 Hours in 1951, where he is a police captain who has to talk the suicidal man, played by the great Richard Basehart, off the ledge, literally, of a building. Fascinating movie.
Richard Basehart really started out in those roles that were mentally disturbed people. I mean, I remember him from Repeat Performance, right?
I think he played that complicated, emotionally fragile guy so well.
Yeah, he really did. So he actually lands on the cover of Life magazine.
Right.
In 1951, he does a film called Angels in the Outfield, a lighthearted comedy about a gruff baseball manager who gets help from an angel, and that was with Janet Leigh.
Yes.
And then We're Not Married, 1952. I've never seen this.
Oh my God, that movie is so great.
What a cast. I mean, this is a comedy with Marilyn Monroe, David Wayne, Ginger Rogers, Fred Allen, Eve Arden, who we love, Eddie Bracken, and Mitzi Gaynor.
And if you haven't seen that movie, it's about all these married couples who find out that the minister who married them wasn't legit, and now they may not be married.
I love it.
It's
okay,
hilarious.
I've got to look for that. He's just really knocking these films out every year. Green Ice, 1954, an adventure drama with Stuart Granger and Grace Kelly.
Then one of my all-time favorite films, and this, again, I would say if you can only watch one Paul Douglas movie.
Yeah, would it be this one?
Watch this movie. It's Clash by Night, 1952, which was directed by the great Fritz Lang. He is just so good as this unsophisticated, oafish fisherman who has to deal with his wife, played by Barbara Stanwyck, having this lusty affair with his best friend, played by Robert Ryan.
Wow.
He's so good, and he shows such vulnerability. It's an outstanding performance.
And you get Barbara Stanwyck as well, right?
Always.
He also is in the all-star cast of Executive Suite, 1954.
Speaking of Barbara Stanwyck.
Yeah, also with Barbara Stanwyck, William Holden, June Allison, Frederick March, Walter Pidgeon, Shelley Winters. Nina Foch, what a cast. And that won the special jury prize at the Venice Film Festival in 1954.
Yeah, so his career is rocking now.
Yeah, he's making the movie posters.
He is making
his
the posters.
His face is on the movie poster.
That name is above the title.
Yeah. Before we get into the later years in his career and a couple of interesting twists that his life takes, it's time for our Hollywood pop quiz.
Yes, and keeping with Paul Douglas, our star of the month, the question is, we just mentioned him appearing in the movie 14 Hours, where he's the cop who has to talk the guy off the ledge, Richard Basehart.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, what future screen goddess made her film debut in that movie, 14 Hours?
And hint, she won an Academy Award.
She did indeed.
Not for that role, but... Right, we'll be right back after this.
Let Mysteries at Midnight be your destination for detective whodunits and captivating mystery stories. You'll hear classic stories like Sherlock Holmes, Agatha Christie's Poirot, and short tales from H.G. Wells, Charles Dickens, Edgar Allan Poe, and others. I'm Christopher, and I read these classic stories in the soothing style of a bedtime story, so you can listen to them in bed when you drift off to sleep. I also host the number one sleep podcast in the world called Sleep Cove, where millions drift off to meditations, hypnosis, and bedtime stories. We soon realized that listeners wanted to hear our mystery stories all in one place, so we created Mysteries at Midnight, where you can listen to all new tales every week. Search for Mysteries at Midnight on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app, and follow and subscribe so you don't miss out on new episodes. So why don't you pick a story now? And can you guess the twist?
Hey y'all, spooky season is here. And if you're looking for a show to whet your appetite for a little haunted history, then I'd like to invite you to check out Southern Gothic, a chart-topping history podcast that explores some of the most infamous legends, folklore, ghost stories, and hauntings of the American South. We've covered all sorts of stuff from the Bell Witch of Tennessee to the disappearance of the Confederate submarine, the H.L. Hunley, not to mention our deep dives into the local lore of some of America's oldest and most haunted cities, like New Orleans, Charleston, and St. Augustine. So, if you're ready for a little good old-fashioned Halloween storytelling with a commitment to quality historical research, then be sure to check out Southern Gothic today. It's available now on all your favorite podcast apps.
Okay, Stephen Ann will be right back, but first another stop on the Hollywood tour. The Western hero most portrayed on the silver screen has been William Frederick Cody, better known as Buffalo Bill. The first actor to play Buffalo Bill Cody in the movies was the man who had perfected that same role for over a quarter century on the stage and in a show arena, William F. Cody. Now, Thomas Edison invited his friend Cody to his New Jersey Kinetoscope studio. That was back in 1894. And Edison's cameraman captured Cody and several other actors in action. Buffalo Bill Cody would later be portrayed by the likes of, get this, James Ellison, Louis Calhern, Joel McRae, Richard Harlan, Charlton Heston, Roy Rogers, Clayton Moore, Paul Newman, and Guy Stockwell. Man, that is a lot of Buffaloes. And now back to Stephen Ann from Beneath the Hollywood Sign.
Welcome back, everyone. And before we go any further into the life of Paul Douglas, I just wanted to give a shout out to this week's Listener of the Week. Our Listener of the Week is Gail Vanderpoel from Alabama. Gail, thank you for your comments. Thank you for your support. Thank you for sharing our post.
We love you, Gail. So, back to Paul Douglas. So, it's 1955, and he decides to go back to the theater. He is in the touring company of the Kane Mutiny, but he gets into a little trouble with Actors Equity Association, the union that governs stage actors.
Yes, apparently Paul had opinions.
Yeah, and which we like.
We like opinionated people. And apparently he shared these opinions with the Greensboro, North Carolina Gazette newspaper, which got him in some hot water. He was quoted in the newspaper saying, The South stinks. It's a land of sow belly and segregation. Well, this offended many Southern audiences. It got Douglas in trouble, although he was later quoted as saying he was misquoted.
Right. He gets put on probation from Actors Equity for a year.
A year, I know.
So that quickly ends his theater career. But luckily, back in Hollywood, he reteams pretty successfully with Judy Holliday from Born Yesterday in the comedy Solid Gold Cadillac in 1956.
Which is such a funny movie. If you've never seen it, Judy Holliday plays this woman who ends up owning like one share in this corporation, and she has thoughts and opinions as a shareholder that she wants to share with the board.
Yes, okay.
And so she goes and comedy ensues and she ends up falling in love with Paul Douglas, who's also this bombastic shareholder type guy.
Right.
Really funny comedy. They had great chemistry.
Oh, yeah. I would imagine, especially after having worked together for so long on Broadway. I'm sure they carried that with them. Now, we know it's the later 50s and lots of screen actors are spending their time on television as well. Paul Douglas is one of them. He's dividing his time and was cast in a 1960 episode of The Twilight Zone that was written specifically for him.
Yes, it was. It was written by the series creator, Rod Serling, and it was based on a character that Douglas had portrayed in Angels in the Outfield. The name of the episode was The Mighty Casey, but things didn't go quite as planned. The day after the episode was completed, Paul Douglas died from complications of coronary artery disease, a heart attack. He was only 52 years old. Well, his scenes were later reshot at Rod Serling's insistence by actor Jack Warden. Serling was later quoted as saying that even had he not passed away, he probably would have reshot the scenes.
Really? Why?
Because he said that Paul Douglas was lethargic. He thought he had been drinking, but I think he was in such poor physical shape from the heart disease that he just wasn't himself. And Serling was really not pleased with the performance.
Okay.
And then, of course, after he passed away, he almost had a good reason to recast, which is so sad. And Douglas appeared in the episode's final shot in the distance with his back to the camera.
Wow.
Interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting. We talked in a previous episode about Paul Douglas dying prior to shooting The Apartment. Billy Wilder had cast him.
Yes, he was all ready to go into that production.
And Fred McMurray took his place instead. I think it's tragic that his life on film is really only 10 years.
Yes.
I mean, he was the up-and-coming youngster at 39. But really, from the time he was 42 to 52, he did pack in a lot of roles and a lot of
films. So many
memorable
performances. And, you know, his final screen appearance, the last film he had that was actually released, was a really charming comedy called The Mating Game in 1959, where he played Debbie Reynolds' doting father. Hmm. And that's also a really fun movie if you've never seen it.
There's another common denominator with many of these larger-than-life actors. He had a larger-than-life married life as well. He was married 5 times.
He was. These guys and gals.
I tell you.
Their trips down the aisle.
Oh, boy.
He was previously married to the British actress Virginia Field, who I really love her. I think she was a really underrated actress. You know, she's probably best known for roles in Waterloo Bridge in 1940, and also a Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court in 1949.
Yeah.
But we all know her from, and we just talked about this, the great film noir repeat performance from 1947, which we covered on our New Year's movie episode.
Yes, yes.
You know, they had 2 children together, Johnny and Margaret.
Okay. At the time of his death, Douglas was married to Jan Sterling.
Love her.
Who was Academy Award nominated.
Yes.
And was a blonde bombshell in films like Ace in the Hole, 1951, The High and Mighty, 1954, and The Harder They Fall, 1956.
Yeah, when he married Jan Sterling, he was quoted saying, and I love this, he said, "If you go to bat often enough, you're bound to get a hit," which I love that.
Yeah. Well, we talked about third time's a charm, fourth time's a charm again. For him, it's fifth time.
Fifth time's a charm. And he and Jan Sterling had 2 children, a son named Adams and a daughter named Celia.
We're going to post on the notes the must-see films of Paul Douglas. But I think you've said it already. If you can only see one Paul Douglas film,
Yes.
Which one would it be for you?
And I said Clash by Night.
Yep.
But I'm going to give myself two.
Okay, give yourself
because
two.
Because you have to see A Letter to Three Wives.
Yes. I think that's really a must see just in general.
It is, in general.
Especially during this Academy Awards season.
Absolutely. So there you have it. Our new star of the month, Paul Douglas. Go see his movies. Check him out. If you're not familiar with him, go make yourself familiar with him.
And we can't wait to bring you April's Star of the Month. Hey, Steve and I wanted to also give a heads up to all our wonderful listeners about next week's episode. Now, we normally drop Sundays at 9:05 p.m. Pacific, but in celebration of the Oscars, which take place Sunday, March 10th, we're going to drop a day early on Saturday, March 9th at 9:05 p.m. Pacific. And we will be talking about, guess what? The history of the Academy Awards. I think it's time for the answer to our Hollywood pop quiz.
Yes, and the question was, in the Paul Douglas movie 14 Hours, which screen goddess made her film debut? And I think you know this one, Nan.
I do. Grace Kelly.
It was. It was our future Princess Grace, who made her film debut. And it's a really charming part, and she's lovely in it, and you could see the potential.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We would love it if you would follow us on social media. Our handle is @FromBeneathTheHollywoodSign. We're on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube.
Subscribe, subscribe, subscribe. And also, we'd love to hear from you. Any thoughts, ideas, comments, you can contact us at info@FromBeneathTheHollywoodSign.com.
That's this week's View.
From Beneath the Hollywood Sign.
You've been listening to From Beneath the Hollywood Sign with Steve Kubine and Nan McNamara, the podcast that celebrates amazing stories of Tinseltown from its golden era. Join us next week for another episode and learn something else about Hollywood you probably never knew. Take a moment and give us a 5-star rating and a positive review. And tell your friends about us, too. It'll help grow the podcast. Visit Steve's website at FromBeneathTheHollywoodSign.com. The executive producers are Steve Kubine and Nan McNamara. Executive producer and post-production supervisor, Lindsay Schnebley. This podcast is part of the Airwave Media Podcast Network. Visit airwavemedia.com to listen and subscribe to their other fine shows like The Box of Oddities and The Shallow End with Schnebley and Toth. Copyright 2024, all rights reserved. That's a wrap.
All you need is a few minutes to start your day off with something historic when you listen to the This Day in History podcast. Every day there's a new episode for you to listen and learn about what happened that day way back when. So listen and subscribe to This Day in History wherever you get your podcasts. That's This Day in History wherever you get your podcasts.